Welcome back to Backstage, where we talk about what's going on here at Relay FM and share our knowledge to help you start a podcast of your own. We're doing it again. We're putting off the episode we said we were going to do. So last time and the time before, we said that we would be talking about monetization and whether that's right for you and your creative project. But that's going to be our next episode, probably, because we're going to do something else today. My name is Mike Hurley, and I'm joined, as always, by Relay FM co-founder Stephen Hackett. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Michael.
I realized I went a really long time without introducing us, but I also feel like I don't even know if that's necessary at this point. But
people who listen to this know who we are because they're members of the network that we run.
Yeah. Yeah, I would expect so. But yeah, so we're going to talk up. Stephen had a great idea because we just wrapped up the podcast-a-thon. How long ago was that?
A week. A little over a week.
A week and a half ago? Like, because it wasn't last Friday or the Friday before, right?
Right.
And so Stephen had the great idea of, well, why don't we talk about, or and, well, really, as ask for questions from our wonderful members about the process of putting on the podcast-a-thon. It's just kind of a unique set of challenges, but we will talk about, again, we'll mention this at the end of the show to get questions, but we're going to come back to monetization stuff next month.
We promise. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought it would be fun. You know, I've gotten several questions on Twitter and in email about the event, and I thought we could just kind of put them all in one place.
Sounds wonderful. So we'll start with JD.
Okay.
How did you come up with the idea of the podcast-a-thon?
Why don't you talk about the idea, and then I can talk about how it kind of came to be the first year.
Yeah, because there's two things, right? I think maybe a lot of people would think that it started with St. Jude, but it kind of did and didn't. Many years ago, before Relay FM, we had the idea of doing this, like a long, I think the original idea in my mind was 24 hours. Mm-hmm. I was a younger man then, quite significantly younger man, and who could maybe have done that. I don't think this current man could do that. Like a 24-hour just audio podcast-a-thon. That was the idea, right? Like a telethon, but in podcast form to raise money for St. Jude. Because before we partnered with St. Jude officially, we would try and raise money for them every year. For a while, it was going through the marathon, I think, that you did. Mm-hmm. And so we thought, oh, why don't we do like a really long charity fundraiser? It was an idea that we had, and kind of it was just always in the back of our minds, but we never really did anything with it because it would have been a lot of hard work and we weren't really sure where to start. But it was always there.
Yeah. And then a few years ago now, I guess 3 years ago, I had been invited to like some design panel or something for ALSAC, which is St. Jude's fundraising organization, and ran to a friend of mine, Ricky. We went to school together, and I kind of just like, kind of off the cuff, shared this idea. I was like, hey, what if we just did this thing, you know, where we've thought about doing it, and I think we're just going to do it. And we talked, and he works with the St. Jude Play Live team, and they work with a lot of streamers and gamers and those sorts of people raising money for St. Jude. And so this was sort of an extension of that. And a few months later, we were doing the first podcast-a-thon. So really, it was this idea that we had always had in the back of our mind. I shared it with a friend of mine who worked at ALSAC, and then it became a very real thing.
And we work very closely with that team. And, you know, it wasn't a massive jump, I feel like, for them. You know, like, we do similar-ish kind of things. You know, we're, like, creators talking to our audiences as opposed to, like, massive multinational companies doing fundraising activation. It's like a different kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So like luckily the person you knew just so happened to be on the right team that it wouldn't have been such a wild jump for them that it would have been hard to pitch it.
Right.
So such.
And I think you'll hear throughout this episode, the answer of a lot of our questions is we work very closely with a team, and it really is a team effort to put this campaign together every year. It's not just me and Mike, you know, just doing stuff. There's a whole group of people who help us make it all work.
Yeah, like, really, everything that me and Steven do, you see.
Yeah.
But that's all we do. Like, all of the other stuff that it's obvious that something like this would need, we don't do it. We work with ULSAC. And so, actually, it's a question from Peter is a good example. Do you forecast your fundraising goal off of previous years, or do you consult with other parties?
Yeah, so we work closely with our team at ULSAC in planning the fundraising goal, which is a big deal because that number can mean a lot of different things to different people. And you want to set something that is ambitious but reasonable. Mm-hmm. I will say that, having said all that, this goal of the $333,333 did start as a joke on a planning call, but where we wanted to go with it basically lined up with it. And so we went mm-hmm. with the joke once we realized that the data supported it.
And I also forgot. So it was in the system and then we launched and I was like, oh no, that feels like too much. I think me maybe more than you, I always really freak out with the goal levels. Yep. Like I always feel like it's an impossibly high number and it upsets me for a period of time. Mm-hmm. And then luckily again, the wonderful team at ULSAC, mostly Jill, works to calm me down with data.
Yeah.
Like, look, here's a graph.
Yeah.
See, everything's okay. We're on the right track on the graph, right? Like that's a thing that they're very good at showing us because they have all the information and they are professionals at looking at fundraising data and they are able to understand what the trends will look like and we work very closely with them for that.
Right. Like you and I are not fundraising experts by any means. We probably know more at this point than maybe the average person, but we're not. This is not our job day to day, right?
It is a skill. It is a real skill. And you need a lot of experience, I think, to understand it. Because like one of the things that I've been thinking about for as we continue going into the future, like we've raised a lot of money this year. We raised a lot more money than we raised last year. And then we raised that year, we raised a lot more money than the year before. But I feel like my feeling of doing this is like that's not going to continue forever. Like at a certain point, things will... I think will plateau because you'll hit a maximum of amount of people, right? But again, that's how I feel, but we have experts who can help us if otherwise. Similarly, Skylar asks, when the campaign started this year, did either of you actually expect to raise over $500,000?
I was hoping we would.
That was what I wanted. I wanted to do that this year.
Yeah.
Because we got close last time.
We did. We got very close last time. And I think that was in the back of all of our minds that, mm-hmm. hey, if we can hit that 500, that would be astonishing. Another reason we set the goal lower is because you want to make sure you hit the goal and then you can do stuff above and beyond it. But that 500K was definitely on everybody's mind, especially once we got underway and we started really with a much bigger bang than in previous years. We felt pretty confident that 500 was going to be within reach.
Yeah, things started very well. I think people were aware of it coming, and it started off really strong again. Mm-hmm. But it's difficult as the goals get higher. Again, this is why we need the experts with the data. As we set the goals higher, it feels like it moves more slowly in the beginning.
Of course,
it moved way faster in the beginning.
It takes longer for that chart to start to fill up on the Tiltify page.
Oh yeah, and like it's another reason why like setting that $500,000 would have been tricky because we wouldn't have reached it until like for like a month.
Yep.
And so you kind of feel like you're always running for it, and I feel like our audience has shown us that the goal to them kind of doesn't matter. Like giving doesn't end when the goal is reached.
Mm-hmm.
People just keep donating. So. But yeah, $500,000 was what we wanted to do. But the real kind of goal in everyone's mind this year, like the thing that we wanted to do more than anything, was to hit the $1 million over 3 years, which was 196. That was like the thing we were really, really focused on.
And that was fun because we were able to hit the $1 million over 3 years pretty early on. Mm-hmm. And it was a nice, like, it's nice to space things out. You know, I think we've gotten better at that this year as far as spacing out when the milestones are going to be for unlocking various things. But yeah, hitting the million in 3 years was a really special thing. And I'm glad we were able to do it before the podcast-a-thon. So the two were kind of separate. I liked how that ended up.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
All right. Sam asks, are you able to walk through your audio and video signal chains for the whole thing?
Oh, yeah, okay. So mine was a little bit more complicated this time. But that was by design because I was able to make my setup better. So this is what I did. I had my PC and I had my MacBook Pro. They were kind of like my... that it was all on a cart, which it was on wheels, which I used last time, but I had it's like an IKEA thing, some shelves and a nice wooden top, which is what my PC usually is on. So I'm able to move it around, which is very useful. So I had my PC, I had a monitor attached to the cart so I could see the call and stuff. So my video was going from my Sony camera, like an actual camera, not a webcam this time, into my PC. Mm-hmm. And I was also watching the video on my PC on a monitor, right, from the Discord call. I then had my audio going into my Mac and out of my Mac. Now, we'd always planned on me having audio out from a Mac because as well as we do the whole call over Discord, we also have a concurrent Zoom call, which has me, you, and Jill, who acts as the producer for the show, on it, so that Jill can provide us with information that nobody else will hear.
Right.
And we do that on a Mac. It's simple for us. We understand how audio works on a Mac. So I had that on AirPods. But what I came to realize quite quickly was if I was had my audio going into the PC, it ended up creating a delay for me. So I ended up just doing all of the audio on the Mac, all of the video on the PC with two separate Discord accounts, one on the Mac, one on the PC. And that was kind of how it worked. And it worked much better this time than last time for me.
Yeah, it really did. And it's obviously much more complicated since you can't be here. I mean, for me, it was a couple of microphones and a crew, which we'll get to. But yeah. I think that your knowledge gained of streaming from a PC has really paid off this year.
Yeah, massive help. Like even just the fact that, oh, you need to actually light everything, you know? So like the visual was much better for me this time because I had lights everywhere.
Mm-hmm. It looked great.
And I think it came out really well. We have more kind of like, and it was just much clearer. One of the things that helped me this year is I was able to think about it a little bit more creatively because I didn't have to just work out the basic fundamentals of how to make the whole thing work. Mm-hmm. And similarly, Marley's asks, you had some AV sync problems between London and Memphis last year. What did you do to prevent that this time around? So last year, towards the end, my audio and video got out of sync and I didn't know it was happening because nobody told me, which I think was the right thing, because then I probably would have started freaking out and it wouldn't have resulted well for us content-wise. But this time, I think a couple of things happened. I think my overall setup was much better. Both years I was plugged into Ethernet, so it wasn't a Wi-Fi issue, it wasn't a connection issue. What I think we ended up deciding on is that it was just being on a Discord call for like 7 hours is probably going to introduce some drift over time. So this time, just in a couple of instances during the podcast-a-thon, I just quit and reopened Discord and joined the call again. And I think that helped a lot, so because it didn't happen.
Yeah, it looked a lot better this time.
Yeah, much, much better. This question would be for you, I think. It comes from Matt. Could you talk a bit more about the studio crew? I saw a picture from St. Jude's Twitter account, probably showing around 15 to 20 people making all of this happen. Can you give us a peek behind the scenes with the effort needed to make it happen from Memphis?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's amazing to have that sort of support because it's just like, I mean... The St. Jude studio is like a real like grown up studio and it requires a lot of people to make it work. And so mm-hmm. we had a couple of camera operators. There were two cameras in the studio. One was kind of locked off, was the main, you know, when I was sitting at the table looking into the camera, and the other one was off to the side. And it's the one that got, you know, when I got up and went around and did things. So a couple camera operators. We had someone running the sound. And so I had two microphones. I had one on the table. And then I had like the Bob Barker, like tall, skinny mic that I used when I got up. And so kind of making sure that those were doing what they were supposed to do. A couple of social media people who worked at AllSac. And so they were doing social media for St. Jude, but also for me, which was really awesome. Not have to worry about
and
that.
And taking really great photos too, right? Just like... Yeah, really good
And some
photos.
Really great yeah. photos. Yeah. So a couple of social media folks. We had one of the team members who did a bunch of the graphics. So like the Fever Fighter character, he would like pop up and his cape would move. That was all illustrated by somebody, and he was there acting as sort of a floor producer. So if I needed to be handed something, or I needed to hand something off, or needed help with something, he was there just kind of like filling in the gaps. And then in the control room, a couple of folks running the big system that put all the video together, the TriCaster.
Yeah, it's a TriCaster. It's like a whole audio video setup thing.
Yeah, it's like all of its brains were in a rack down the hall. I got to look at it. It was very cool. Very nice cable job, whoever installed that. So a couple of people running that. And then they were, depending on the time, 4, 5, or 6 St. Jude Play Live team members. We had Jill, our producer. She was basically in charge. And so she had the schedule. She was talking to me and you in our earpieces, kind of directing things as we went. And then we had a few other people running different tallies on things, kind of keeping up with the data, solving problems as they came up. And then one element that was new this year that we haven't spoken about yet is you and I each had a display off camera that showed us the amount raised, what was next on the schedule, that sort of thing. That was extremely helpful and a really great addition. And there was a team member dedicated to keeping that up to date. And so we could always see, hey, the next milestone is this. Hey, this is next on the schedule. You've raised this much. Gifts over a certain amount got highlighted there so we can make sure to thank people. Yeah, it was a lot of people. And it really makes it much easier just to focus on the content when you don't have to run around and do all that other stuff. And so I greatly feel for you and Adina having to do that, y'all. Do that yourselves.
Yeah, well, that's the next question. But very different for you than last year, because no one was allowed in the same room as you last year, basically, right? Like they locked off the cameras and just...
Yeah, there were a couple people.
Let it ride. Okay.
There was one camera person last year. I think he maybe also kept an eye on the soundboard. There were only 3 or 4 in the control room. So this year was much more flexible. Everyone's vaccinated. Everyone's wearing masks, staying socially distant. The second I was off camera, I had a mask on. And so we were able to stay safe, but still pull it off with a full crew.
Which was fun for me because Stephen would go shave part of his face and he would come back into frame and I would see him, but he'd have a mask on and he wouldn't take it off until like we were given our countdown. So I always got a very live reaction to Stephen's ever-growing or ever-reducing facial hair.
That was kind of a nice side effect that I hadn't considered until it was happening.
It was very good. Although what it probably meant is you were breathing in lots of little hairs.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, that mask was really gross.
Yeah, terrible.
So what about you? Talk about life in Mega Studio.
Yeah, so Max had this question. Besides the crew, what are the differences between recording in St. Jude and in the Mega Studio? So obviously, one, it's just me and Adina, right? So Adina is an incredible help doing the job of everyone that you mentioned for as much as we... I mean, luckily, we don't have to do as much, right? We're not doing any audio, video switching or whatever.
Right.
But like getting everything where it needs to be, making sure that we're set up, making sure I have what I need, being able to hand things over to me. And Adina is also like on the... she can hear everything I can hear because we had one pair of AirPods. We just split them between the two of us. Mm-hmm. And what we do is during a video segment, one of us would just take one out and pop it in the case to charge, and we'd just swap those out every now and again, which ended up working out pretty well. We did that last time. Like I remember last time we had like 3 pairs of AirPods, like just in case we needed to switch them out, and we were surprised that they could last the whole time. But it ended up working pretty well again this time with just the one pair. You just got to keep it charged. But the biggest kind of like some of the biggest things that we're dealing with is far less space. Like this is our working studio now, and like we had less space than last year because we have more furniture in here than we did last year. I didn't think we did, but we did. Like I ended up looking at some pictures and there's a lot of stuff that had come in after the podcast-a-thon, because last year I wasn't recording from here yet. I was still recording at home. So there just wasn't as much gear to rearrange or move, and there wasn't as much space. So just general access to resources, you know, like just overall, there's just greater resources at St. Jude for the stuff that's needed for the stream itself. And it's, as you said, right, you've got like a purpose-built studio. This is not that. So yeah, much constrained, but we make it work.
I think y'all did a great job. It looked great. There was never a situation I felt like y'all were scrambling. It really felt really well put together on your end. So
yeah, it still works fine. Like, you know, that now we've done it. We've done this more now, not in person, which is funny, really. And it works fine, especially because, I mean, even if we were in person, basically all of our guests would have been remote. So it actually kind of works out fine to do it remotely.
But hopefully we don't have to do that anymore.
We'll talk about that later. Skylar asks, at a few points, you could hear the Discord join call sound. What caused you to use Discord over the alternatives to the podcastathon?
I think it's mostly flexibility. And honestly, Discord is pretty easy to use for what we need, because we just had an ongoing call. And one person who didn't mention earlier, and we absolutely should mention now, is Kathy Campbell, our community manager. She was running sort of traffic on the Relay side. And so she was working to get our guests in and out of the Discord channel and out of the Discord call. And she really was instrumental in all that running very smoothly. And so with Discord, we could just add people and drop people as we needed them to. Whereas with some other things, that's a little bit more complicated.
Yeah, Discord has pretty high video quality compared to some of the other stuff. It's flexible for the TriCaster team because they can pop the video windows out and can move them around as they need, which is why I really like it for streaming too. I don't have to window capture my entire Discord. Like, I can just pop that call out into its own window and capture that. And I think also one of the great things about Zoom is that ability for people to just join and leave really easily. They don't have to be added to the call. Right, you can just join the call, which I think is very helpful for what we were doing. Let me see, where are we next? Okay. So Eric asks, why doesn't the podcastathon have its own logo and like theme music or anything like that?
I mean, it's really an event for St. Jude, so we can work with the St. Jude branding. Obviously, that requires a lot of approvals because they're rightfully so very protective of their brand, and so we can sort of fold into that with our very basic, you know, podcastathon and the year. But it also means that if we want to change things, so like last year we had the space theme, this year we had the fever fighter, we can change that as we go. I think having its own sort of Relay artwork would be limiting to that.
I like that it's actually something where we adopt, as you say, we adopt their branding rather than trying to create any of our own. I also just don't think it's necessary to have, like, for us to spend the time to create something like kind of like a show art. Like, it doesn't really make sense for me to do that, right? Like, I don't really know why we would do that.
Yeah.
How did you spend, this comes from Matt, how did you spend your breaks off screen? Were you eating quickly, grabbing power naps, drinking Coke or Red Bull? What were you doing?
Yeah, bathroom breaks, shaving. One thing I really got to do, because we did a better job this year at scheduling the breaks. And so I would go get a snack, go something to drink. Then I would check in the control room. Like, okay, like this is the next three segments. Are we on time? Kind of just making sure that I was aware of what was going on. Because we had because we had the extra 2 hours, having the breaks were... it was much more vital than in the past, I would say.
Yeah, like one of the things that I did this time that I didn't do last time was have dinner. Like last year, it was kind of just like snacking the whole time. But I had like a really good long break. I had like 2 45-minute breaks with 15 minutes on in between. So I was able to order and have pizza during that. I think during the Boulder Dash. I ate during the Boulder Dash, one of the Boulder Dash streams. But other than that, it's very similarly, right? Like, just checking everything set. We had to do a lot of setup during some of the breaks. You know, like, get more balloons, blow up more balloons was the thing that Adina was doing a lot of, which we have this machine, which you would not want to hear while I'm on air. It's a horrible sound. It's basically a reverse vacuum, right? Like, it just makes that kind of noise. Lots of like setting up and stuff too.
Aaron asks, I'm curious about how the physical game pieces came together. The spin wheel and the Board of Despair were new. Where did they come from?
The Mines of St. Jude, I think.
Yeah.
I don't fully remember. We have these calls, so they start in like March.
Mm-hmm. And this was an early concept that they had brought to the table. Yeah. So I think they had come up with this idea and then we ran with it.
And so then over time, we kind of like fill out what we want to do. And this was something that was from the very beginning for this year's of like having challenges to do. They always want us to do challenges because it works really well for a lot of the other streamers that they do. And I like doing them too. And it gives us something to keep coming back to. And they came up with the idea of the wheel and the plinker board, although I don't think we can call it that. Like, was it generic plastic brooding block? Mm-hmm. That kind
of thing. Yeah. They were so much fun to play with and they sounded really good.
Yeah, I hope that we can bring the wheel back another time and I get to spin it because it looked good. Matt wants to know what the biggest oopsie this year was that we may or may not have caught on the stream any narrowly avoided disasters.
I don't think anything serious happened. I will say in one of the segments, I lost track of time and I was like chatting in the thing, like in the control room. And one of the producers was like, 15 seconds. And I basically ran flat out of the control room, amazing, through the studio, incredible, into the chair. You would never know, but I cut it very close one time.
Yeah, there's always something in the setup, but it's why we do a rehearsal. Like, I think this year we had some Wi-Fi problems or something, right, beforehand, but that all got fixed. So, like, we do a rehearsal that the 2 days before and the day before,
yeah,
of stuff to make sure that we catch issues before they occur, which is very good. Yeah, I don't think I had anything. I nearly fell over at one point, but that was off camera. It would have been pretty bad, though, if I would have, because I was aiming straight for the table that was inside the balloon room. That would have been real rough, but we didn't have any problems this time.
Zach asks, what was your favorite piece of campaign bonus content this year, and why was it the modcast?
Obviously, the modcast and home screen roasting stuff in the Discord has been great. You may have seen this pop up in the... in the feed, in the crossover feed, it was like a podcast made by the Relay FM mods and admins where they were roasting each other's home screens and then just did it for everybody else in the Discord. So that stuff has been really great. The overall like participation of people in the Discord this year has been awesome. There's been like a bunch of things like challenges for donations and stuff, which has been really fun. I also really enjoyed the Flight Sim and Kerbal Space Program streams. They were very, very fun. I had a great time doing those with you.
We're really good at rockets and planes.
Rockets and planes. Very good at it. Like, just mm-hmm. so good.
Kate asks, how has the community reaction engagement been compared to your expectations?
Oh, yeah. There was also the widget. There's like a whole app and widget thing in the Discord. There's a test light floor. That was amazing. It's been very helpful for me this year to be able to check the progress. That's been very good. So thank you to everybody that worked on that. It grows every year though, right? Like people just seem more involved and engaged because they know it's coming. Mm-hmm. I think it's like over time, it's like a snowball going downhill, right? But like we pick up more people that become engaged with the campaign, and it's very, very good. And this year for sure, as I just mentioned, the Discord has been much more active than the year previous, and I expect it to continue next year.
Yeah, it's really been amazing to see people like doing all these things around the campaign, and I love it. I love the fun things that people come up with and the things that we get to enjoy that, you know, we didn't do that stuff, right? Like that came out of the community, and that's so much fun.
Skylar asked, how many people gave the two of you weird looks while you had the phone cases in your phones?
You know, I feel like I did pretty well at the football game. At church the next day, definitely got some questions about it.
I feel like maybe you just weren't paying attention to people at the football game. Because I guarantee if I saw you with that phone case, I would have been like, that's a bold choice.
Yeah.
I didn't notice anyone. I think I got away with it pretty well. I think you went pretty tame. I think, or what I should say is I think you didn't know what I was going to do to you. I think that was the problem.
I definitely underestimated your deviousness.
Mm-hmm. Again, I sent two options. It wasn't me that made the final decision for yours.
Yeah, I know.
One was more understated and one was very overstated.
Can you tell me what the other one was?
Yeah, I think I already mentioned it to you. It's, what are they called? Fidget poppers?
Oh,
it's
that's like right. Yes. Yeah, you did.
It was like
that.
A fidget popper phone case, which would have been great fun, I think. Matt asked, what was your favorite moment from this year's podcast-a-thon?
There's just one. The one obvious winner, when Rick Shadyac, the CEO of AllSac, hit my IBM PC Junior with a baseball bat.
He didn't hit it. He obliterated it. He destroyed it.
He smashed it.
He sent that thing back to its maker.
Yeah.
Overall, that segment with Rick, I really enjoyed a lot. Like, the conversation that you had with him was very, very good.
Thank you.
Even though I just now had a PTSD flashback to my vamping.
Yeah.
While you were getting your audio set up. Oh my God, that was terrible.
That was the oops. That was the oopsie.
I just forgot about it until now. I don't know what was going on over there, but
it was my fault. I had muted my laptop, and so the audio didn't.
That was it. And I had to just, I don't know what I was doing or saying. I was just saying anything that came into my mind. And yeah. I think nobody could really hear. You guys couldn't hear me, which was good. So I just kept going and going and going for a while. That was a Steven-related oopsie.
Yeah, 100% my fault. And, like, I felt so bad because everyone was, like, running around behind the camera. You know, the CEO is there. His people are all there. And I was like, oh, it's me. It's on me. I hit this button in Discord. Yeah, that interview was the only thing in the podcast that I was truly nervous about. I mean, there's always nerves going into an event. The interview is what kept me up the night before. It's the thing.
Oh, I'm not surprised. He's a super important person. And, yeah. Like, all of the other guests that we had were mostly our friends, so like they would be kind on us and wait, right? Like if something mad was going on or we were late or whatever. But like, also it's maybe he wouldn't have like committed to it occurring exact same time as the Inspiration 4 thing. I don't know. But like Rick was clearly a very busy man at that point.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate that he did give the time and I really liked it and it was very nice.
Yeah, I really think it went well.
Kim wants to know if you had to fill out a workplace safety questionnaire for the sledgehammer that you brought into the studio.
I'm not sure I can comment on that.
That would make me suggest that you were supposed to, but didn't.
Not everyone knew that the sledgehammer was there.
Right.
And some people were very nervous as I was pulling it out, apparently.
I was super nervous as you were doing it. Because as well, there's one moment where it looks like that thing is making its own path in life. Mm-hmm. You raised it over your head and you went a little bit further back, I think, than you were expecting. I will try and find this moment at some point. But it looked like that the sledgehammer was deciding it was going the other direction.
Yeah.
And you weren't ready for it.
I will say,
those things, they are heavy.
I know. And I will say the next morning I got up, I was like, oh, my back hurts. I'm like, oh, right. I know what did that.
Yeah. Yeah, sledgehammer and baseball bat. Super good. It was very good.
Uh-huh.
Poor computer. Similarly, Amalis asks, have any angry IBM retro computing enthusiasts reached out to you?
Are there IBM retro computing enthusiasts?
The answer is all of them, which means none of them have reached out.
Yeah.
Peter wants to know if you prefer to shave or save your mustache and how the people in your life think about that.
I want to keep it.
You always want to keep it. I think you would want to keep it all the time, but I feel like maybe it doesn't go down very well.
I feel like my family is okay with it for a while, but then it's time to move
on. Okay.
All right, up next, Kate asks, how was planning this year compared to previous years? Is there anything you learned before that stands out as being useful this time around?
Plan for multiple options.
Yeah, so 2020, we didn't really know... I mean, no one did how bad the pandemic was going to get. And so we kind of had two tracks of like, maybe it's in person, maybe he has to be remote. It became clear you had to be remote. But this time...
But we stayed hopeful for a really long time. Like in hindsight, we were hopeful it was going to work out for a silly long time.
Yeah.
Like, because we were just like, well, surely it will be okay in 2 months, in 1 month, in 2 weeks. Like, you know, it was silly. But we didn't know what we were dealing with, right? Nobody did.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like overall, though, everything gets better every year because we have all of the experience from the previous mm-hmm. years. And so there's always things that we learn. You know, like I said earlier, like, okay, it's going to be really important to space the breaks out better. And so I was able to build that into the run of show, with that knowledge from the previous 2 years. So there's always things that we take forward from the event that make the next one better.
Yep, definitely.
Steve asks, assuming that Mike can go to Memphis next year, will you continue the trend of length of last year plus two for a 10-hour podcastathon?
It's not a trend.
It's not a trend. So the first year was six.
Second year was six, but you pushed it an hour, but it was technically six still.
Yeah, so it ended up being seven. This one ended up being eight, or planned for eight, and it was eight. We ended on time.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't think we can go past eight very easily. Eight felt like a wall to me that I didn't really expect.
Yeah, I mean, I think I could have gone another 2 hours. I could have done it. I wouldn't have wanted to necessarily, but I could have.
Yeah.
And I think we could do it, and maybe one day we will, but here's a couple of things. Like, one, there's a lot of people we have to get the buy-in for to stay for, like, to 10 hours, right? We've already spoken about that. It's a lot of people.
Yeah.
My feeling, though, is that if we are able to be in person next year, which I'm very confident that we will be able to be, because, like, if the podcastathon was in December, we would have been, because I can travel to the U.S. from November. Again, so that was the only reason. The only reason it wasn't in person is because I couldn't be there. It wasn't like a Mike doesn't want to travel. Like I said this the whole time, if travel's possible, I'll do whatever it takes. Like,
yeah,
if I had to quarantine for 2 weeks, I would have done it, but I would have been turned away at the border. I would not have been allowed into America. But my feeling is, if we're back in person again, we will do more on camera together than we have in the previous years. What we've done in the last couple of years is like do a bunch of pre-recorded stuff. But I think we would probably do less of that because we're back together again. And so that would probably be, I mean, again, we have not had any conversations about next year, but my expectation would be if we're back together again, like that's kind of the theme of the year, right? Mm-hmm. Like we're back together again. So we'll probably spend more time on camera together, which would mean we'd be more tired. And I wouldn't want to do that for 10 hours until we've done one of those for eight. Because the first year, we felt horrible when we were done because we were on camera for so much of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it would probably be a similar feeling to that, just from like an exhaustedness.
Yeah, and it's just different when you're remote, right? Like, I think people can definitely notice in watching it that there's more handing off between the two of us. That obviously is different, a little bit different in person. So Sam had a related question. Have you ever considered a model like Desert Bus with more money, meaning more time podcastathoning?
Do you know what Desert Bus is?
No, and I forgot to look it up before we started.
It's a game streaming related thing.
Okay.
Desert Bus is like a game. You can look it up. It's interesting. Desert Bus, by the way, it actually could be an interesting and genius if you want to look into it. I think it could be fun to talk about. Similarly, so if me and you were just doing it like we do a stream, I feel like we could do that, you know, and like make that thing. And like, so a lot of streamers do this, they're called subathons. And like the more subscribers you get over a period of time, the longer you stay, like, you know, like someone subs and it adds 10 minutes to the clock or whatever it might be. The issue for all of that would be is we are trapping 10 to 15 people in that space. And that I don't think is fair on them, where it's actually their jobs. Right? Like that's where it starts to get a bit difficult rather than it just being me and Steven impacting ourselves with these ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Again, who knows what the future might hold, right? Like we're planning to do this forever. So like 1 year, maybe we do go for just a ridiculous amount of time and it's planned out in far in advance and we have people coming in on shifts. Who knows, right? But that idea of not having a plan of how long it's going to last before going in, I don't like that.
No, I don't think that works.
We could do it on our own one day, like if there's no studio involved. But if we're going to be doing it at OLSAC, I don't know how we could make that work. Finally, Matt wants to know any teasers or hints for next year.
We're going to do it again, baby.
Yeah, we'll do it again. We know that much. We want to raise more money. We'll know that much. We'll be in person. We know that much. I'm committing to this now. We will be in person.
I was going to say, you went from nervously guessing to no, just
now I'm putting it out in the world. This is called the secret. So I'm putting it out in the world. You know, you put into the world what you want out of it. The thing is, maybe if you asked us in a few weeks we would know, but we haven't had our, like, we haven't started any planning. I guess within the next couple of weeks we have like a wrap-up call or like a debrief that we'll do with OLSAC, and we go over what we think worked, what we think didn't, and then we will pause until the spring, and then we start again.
Yeah, we get a few months off, or they get a few months off from us, depending on how you look at it.
They get a few months off. I think it's not us. I think it's them.
Well, they go and do other things. You know, I like to think that they just work with us.
Like, I mean, like, they deal with much bigger stuff than me and you. I just mean they get away, you know, from us.
I love September, dude. It's so much fun. Mm-hmm. If you haven't donated yet, we're still running through the end of the month. stjude.org/relay. We'd love to have your support in this record-breaking campaign. Record-breaking, mm-hmm. Mike.
stjude.org/relay. We've raised over $560,000. Thank you so much for your support.
I think that's it.
So on our next episode, we will be talking about if monetization is right for you. So for your show, for your creative project, if so, how do you do it? Well, you know, it's this whole idea of people want monetization, but should you? Like, obviously, people want to get paid for their creative work, but is it actually the right idea for your project? So if you have questions about that, or there's things that you want to hear us talk about, you can tweet with the hashtag AskBackstage or use #AskBackstage in the Relay FM members Discord, and that will be able to send in a message into our spreadsheet that we'll pull out for next time. We'll also send a reminder a week or two before we record in the Discord. Or you can email longer answers or questions, I should say, to backstage@relay.fm. Hey, if you have the answers, send those to us too. We'd love the answers if you have them. So until next time, when we ask you to come backstage with us, I'm Mike Hurley and he's Stephen Hackett. Say goodbye, Stephen.
Bye, y'all.